Good morning. My name is Abram Kidd, and I've been asked to share the word with you this morning. To briefly introduce myself, I am a missionary with AIM, Africa Inland Mission. We are currently, my wife and I are currently in Tanzania, just on the shores of Lake Victoria. We are supported missionaries by Redovio Bible Chapel, and we're very thankful for your continued prayers and support. I'm originally from Renfrew, Ontario. My wife is from Portland. She's American. And she is a founder of a children's home in Kenya. We have four boys, three of our own, and a little Tanzanian boy that we've had for 3.5 years. We're trying to adopt him. We are working at a little Bible school called NASA Theological College. We're involved in theological education. I teach there full-time. I teach Bible courses, how to interpret the Bible, and missions courses. The missions emphasis is particularly in the last few years. In Tanzania, the church is growing. But in our context, there are several completely unreached people groups in the country. There are still many Muslims in the country. There are a lot of people who are from traditional religions background, nominally Christian, or are mixing Christian beliefs and practices with traditional religious beliefs and practices. So we're teaching the Bible and training church leaders to work mainly in churches or to plant churches and reach unreached peoples in this kind of context. So our goal, in short, is to prepare people to be leading and planting Christ-centered churches and promoting missions work, helping people to get the gospel of Jesus out there so that people can hear the good news and learn more about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. This morning, I would like to talk very briefly about leadership and power, and particularly in uncertain times. I follow the, at least American news quite closely, and some international news. And of course, because of COVID-19 pandemic, there seems to be an awful lot of uncertainty, instability in the world today. Economic instability, where are our countries, our national leaders going? What are they doing? And the responses of various leaders is quite revealing when it comes to leadership and how people lead others in uncertain times. If we look, for example, at or contrast the leadership of former President Donald Trump and current President Joe Biden, we can see that there is a perception of a strong kind of leadership and a, let's say, weaker kind of leadership. Whether the leadership actually is stronger or weaker, that's up to, opinions vary. Similarly, here in Tanzania, our recent President Magufuli suddenly died just a few months ago. And he was a particularly strong leader in the sense of almost dictatorial, very strict. And there were certain advantages to that too. He certainly helped with cleaning up corruption. And there was quite a sense of fear amongst government workers because he was very strict and he was very enthusiastic in making sure that his people were served well and that his fellow leaders in government positions were being responsible, honest, and serving the people. after his passing, there was a lot of question about what the following president would look like. Would they continue in his footsteps? Would they have the similar sort of leadership style? And his vice president stepped into the position, and she is a Muslim woman. And this is a new thing for Tanzanian culture, for Tanzanian history, to have a woman president who was not elected, but stepped into this position because of the circumstances of the death of the former president. And he was only elected a few months previous to his death. So the current Tanzanian president will have almost 5 years in office. So very interesting situation. And her perspective over handling of COVID-19 response, for which the previous president received a lot of international criticism. The current president is making some changes to resemble more international leaders. One perspective we might have from the Bible on these kind of unstable, uncertain times, and looking at the responses of different world leaders that comes to mind is Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7, Daniel's given the vision of four kinds of worldly, beastly, unnatural kingdoms. And we can observe there, together with being imperfect, outside of God's will, in the sense of the way that they, the way that they're presented, the behaviors, the choices, it would appear that these kingdoms make. There, we're also reminded that these kingdoms come and go, that God, the one who is the ancient one, the one on the throne, his is the eternal kingdom. And so when we look at different governments rising and falling, even today, we could be reminded of that vision from Daniel. But for this morning, I would like to look in particular at Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6, verse 45 to 52. Because there, again, I think we can learn a lot from the miracle of Jesus walking on the water. I think it has some encouraging and instructive lessons there for us. And so that will be our focus for this morning's message. So let's begin by reading Matthew chapter 6 and verse 45 to 52. It says, I'm reading from the NIV. Immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him into Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. After leaving them, he went on. He went up on a mountainside to pray. When evening came, the boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on the land. He saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. About the fourth watch of the night, he went out to them, walking on the lake. He was about to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. They cried out because they all saw him and were terrified. Immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid." Then he climbed into the boat with them, and the wind died down. They were completely amazed, for they had not understood about the loaves. Their hearts were hardened. Now, before we get into a little more depth, to me, the context is essential for a good understanding of this passage. So the passage preceding this, that is, let's say, verses 30 up to 44, we have Jesus feeding the 5,000. The miracle of Jesus feeding the 5,000. And this is, by the way, also these two passages are linked in Matthew chapter 14 and John chapter 6. That is the feeding of the 5,000 together with Jesus walking on the water. So that is very important. I think it's very important because clearly these incidents, they're not at the same time, but chronologically, they are one follows immediately after the other within a space of just some hours. And two, the purposes of the gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, and John, here, if we look at the big picture, the gospel writers are explaining their teaching about who Jesus is, who Jesus is. So they're recording his teachings, they're recording his actions, and these miracles are put together very deliberately. I think it is also important to observe in general that clearly the gospel writers wanted us to know something very important about Jesus. And putting these two miracles together, we can benefit by interpreting them together. We can benefit by recognizing Jesus' leadership and who he is. Preceding this passage, Jesus feeding the 5,000 in the Gospel of Matthew, again in chapter 14, and also in Mark, we have the account of King Herod beheading John the Baptist. And unfortunately, we can't take time to read both of those passages, but I have in the past been taught about how John the Baptist, the beheading of John the Baptist, King Herod contrasted with Jesus, who is the good shepherd and who feeds the 5,000, is an amazing, wonderful, insightful lesson on two different kinds of king. We have King Herod, who is rash, King Herod, who is impulsive, foolish, who is weak, succumbs to peer pressure, makes a foolish promise, and the end result in this brief story is the death of John the Baptist. So we could look to King Herod and learn a lot of leadership lessons. He's a poor leader, a bad leader. And the outcome for us here is that John the Baptist is beheaded. And it seems for no good reason. We contrast that with the passage immediately following, and Jesus, we find, is acting as a good shepherd. It says in verse 34 of Mark 6, when Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. So he's a shepherd. He is teaching them. He is compassionate towards them. And he provides for them. He provides for them in a spiritual way by teaching the word of life. And he also provides for them physically. And this is very similar to what God does for the Israelites in the Old Testament in the wilderness, where he gives them his word, which brings them life. And he also provides for them bread from heaven. Miraculous provision of food. So people have observed these similarities. Jesus is acting as God did with his people, the Israelites, in the Old Testament when they were in the wilderness, providing the word and providing food in a miraculous way. And so this would be a way to emphasize and reveal that Jesus is God. Jesus is God. He's the same one who is the God of the Old Testament, the same one who provides for his people in miraculous ways. And so we can take great comfort in that kind of leadership, in that kind of king that we are following, and the one who we're under his leadership and under his authority. In contrast with King Herod, of course, The outcome is life. The outcome is far better than the death that King Herod's leadership led to. Death versus life. Now, if we going back to verses 45 to 52, the miracle of Jesus walking on the water, we can continue this perspective of looking at Jesus' leadership, looking at the circumstances of the miracle, and again, we can learn more principles of leadership and what Jesus does with his power and revealing who he is. We could also maybe just add here that even the context of Jesus feeding the 5,000, it's in a remote and solitary place. This is also like in the wilderness for the Israelites. Now, verse 45, let me go back to further context for the miracle of Jesus walking on the water. The environmental conditions or the context, the physical context of the story is that Jesus sends the disciples out onto the Lake Galilee. And we read there that it is windy, that the disciples are straining at the oars. So they're struggling against the wind and the waves on the lake caused by the wind. And it is in the evening and they're struggling into the night. So it is windy, it's wavy, it's dark. There are a number of things in the Old Testament that the Old Testament background that I think are significant when we are thinking about the context of this story, the physical context. One, in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 2, there is at the beginning of the creation account, we find the Spirit of the Lord hovering over the waters. And there it is dark. Light hadn't been created. It is dark. And we have the waters of chaos covering the earth. There was no dry land yet at that time. And here, some different commentators, scholars have observed that it is in the context of darkness, chaos, disorder, that the Spirit of God comes and the work of creation begins. And we learn from Genesis 1 that God is the one who brings order. God is the one who brings light, and he creates the conditions for life, not just for human life, but all life that we know of on the earth. So there, God his character and his actions in bringing order, light, and conditions for life contrast with a dark, chaotic, watery kind of place. To me, I think this is an important background when we think about Jesus walking on the water, because it is also dark. It is chaotic, it's windy, and this is where the disciples are, and Jesus walks into that situation. Secondly, we could think of the story of Noah and the ark in Genesis chapter 6, 7, 8. There also we learn that God brings waters of judgment. It is a chaotic situation in the sense that all life is destroyed. There's no stability, no dry land again. And the only safety is the ark, which God has instructed Noah to build, and the ark where God closed the doors, and those creatures that are inside, including Noah and his family, are safe. Everywhere else, chaos, destruction, death. Now, God gave the instructions, and God created those conditions, and then later on reversed them, when the floodwaters were reduced, and we get a picture of creation. It's almost like creation starting over again. There's another passage. There's a verse in Job chapter 9 also that could relate to or be in the background of this passage of Jesus walking on the water. Job chapter 9 and verse 8, where it says, he alone stretches out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. He alone stretches out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. This is Job in praise of God, recognizing that God also has the ability to tread on the or walk on the waves of the sea. He has that ability. We could also even think of the Nile in Egypt in Exodus, the 10 plagues. One of the plagues was that the waters of the Nile were turned to blood. God did that. And in doing that, he shows that he is able to overturn the power of the gods of Egypt. And he is able to have authority over that great Nile River, which the Egyptians were almost completely dependent on for food and life. And then finally, even in the book of Mark, where in chapter 6, we're reading about Jesus walking on the water, just in chapter 5, at the beginning of chapter 5, we have the story of Jesus healing the man who was demon-possessed. And the demons that were in this man were, Jesus cast them out, and the demons request to be sent into the pigs. And where the and this is on the shore of Lake Galilee in a Gentile area. And pigs, you know, are unclean animals for the Jews. So it's a Gentile kind of area. And the demons request to go into the pigs. And then where do the pigs go? They go into the lake and drown. They go into the lake and drown. So maybe the demons felt more at home in a chaotic sort of environment. Clearly they're destructive, and the pigs die. Anyway, all of these interesting associations and background to now the miracle of Jesus walking on the water. One more thing for context. Even here, we live on the shore of Lake Victoria. And Lake Victoria here, for the people that we work among, traditionally, the lake is a dangerous place. It is associated with demons. It's a home for demons. And to me, even from a traditional religion's sort of perspective, it is interesting to me that it is an unstable, unsafe place. Often we think of lakes as sources of water that brings life, and you know, you can irrigate, and it's good for crops and so on and so forth. But at least part of the understanding of Tanzanians in this area of Lake Victoria is that it is a dangerous place and it is associated with demons. And it's particularly dangerous at night or during a storm. People die, fishermen who go out in boats to fish at night. If a storm comes up, it is very dangerous, and people will often die. So in this context, I think that sort of background would not be lost on what the significance of Jesus' miracle of walking on the water is in this passage. I think they would make that connection, that Jesus has authority over chaos, has the authority over the instability, the uncertainty of a lake, especially during a storm, when it's windy, and especially also when it is at night. All right, so going back to our passage, verse 45, just a few more observations. Verse 45, immediately following the miracle of Jesus feeding the 5,000, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida. It's just worth noting here that Jesus knew what he was doing, and he knew that he was sending the disciples into a particularly dangerous and unstable situation. He knew what he was doing. He made the disciples go. They didn't know what was going to happen, but Jesus did, and he let them go. He sent the crowd away, and then he goes to the mountainside to pray. And then we read about the disciples struggling against the wind. No doubt they're frustrated. And then it gets into the night, and it's even scarier situation. The disciples are terrified, frustrated. And then all of a sudden, they see Jesus walking on the lake. They cry out because they all saw him and they were terrified. They were terrified of the circumstances already. And when they see Jesus out walking on the water, this is a totally abnormal situation. They had never seen Jesus do this before. And they misunderstand what's going on. They misunderstand who Jesus is. This becomes very clear, and they are terrified. They think that he's a ghost. It may be not surprising because again, of the circumstances, it's chaotic. It's dangerous. There are spiritual associations here that may have made them expect that this is maybe the realm of evil spiritual powers and not necessarily a place where Jesus could or would go. Remember, in ancient Middle Eastern background, the perception of gods, many of them, were that they were territorial. They belonged to certain areas. So there was the god of this nation and the god of this nation and the god of this land and so on. And so the disciples may have thought that, yes, it's fine for Jesus to do miracles on the land. He just did this miracle, a few hours ago, feeding us. But that was on the land. Those were much different circumstances. It was calm. It was a remote area. But the nature of his power and his leadership in that context was much different from what is going on here. And so they may, again, not have been expecting that Jesus could or would enter that situation. And then he's walking on water. He's walking on the water. That is, he's unfazed. He's untouched by the circumstances. He is not struggling like they are against the wind and the waves. He is simply walking purposefully, powerfully, confidently. And then the disciples are terrified because they hadn't understood this about Jesus. And the implications of what Jesus is doing here are so significant. Not just because of the physical miracle, but all of the symbolic and the spiritual associations here. We read in Job, it's God that walks on the waves of the sea. It is God who has the power to bring order in a very unstable, dark, and unsafe conditions. Remember, even Jesus teaching about building your house on a solid foundation, contrasted with building your house on the sand. Clearly, his teachings go together with his character and his ability, his power. So we are wise to rely on him. And it is not that Jesus will just only provide good conditions for us, for life, for us as his followers. The point there in Matthew, in Matthew chapter 7, the end there is that Jesus' teachings are solid. They're reliable. We can build on them. We can survive. And it is not, and the conditions there, it's not if, it's when. Not if, when. So again, Jesus sent the disciples into this situation because this is normal for life. There are turbulent, unstable times. It is normal. And what do we do in those kind of unstable, uncertain times? Well, here we look to Jesus, who has the ability to walk on the waves, on the water. And then what does Jesus say in response to the disciples and their misunderstanding? He says, take courage. It is I. Again, it is I. There, the Greek word I've read that the Greek word is, Jesus is using the term I am. I am. Very significant because it's a name for God in Exodus chapter 3, verse 14. This is one of the key ways that God revealed himself, his name, in Exodus, in the Old Testament. And so he's the I am. And Jesus identifying himself as the I am. And in that, in Exodus 3, God also reveals himself in verse 16 and 17, that he sees, he's watching closely his people, the Israelites suffering in slavery in Egypt. He is he's going to rescue them, and he is going to lead them. Those three actions also very revealing about the kind of God that we have. And then finally, Jesus says, don't be afraid. And again, for our context of instability, uncertainty, what's going to happen, and reflecting on different leadership choices of our national leaders and so on, Jesus makes a nice contrast, encouraging us, stating that it is I, he is there, he is always there. He is not limited by physical territory, he's not a territorial God. He is not afraid to go into a chaotic situation. And when he is in a chaotic situation, he is able to bring stability and certainty and safety. And then he removes fear. So Jesus brings authority, he brings power, he brings stability, he brings certainty. Mm-hmm. And for the disciples, this is also not the first time that they had seen Jesus. He did a similar miracle on the lake in the context of a storm where he spoke to the waves and the wind, and they obeyed him. And they were in awe of that. Finally, in verse 52, it says, for they had not understood about the loaves, their hearts were hardened. So again, there's a Mark seems to be in maybe even making a connection with the faith or lack of faith of Pharaoh in hardening his heart. The disciples also simply had not understood Jesus well, and maybe they were happy and accepting of him being the one who provides the food, but he's the same one who is able to walk on water in the turbulent times. The same one, the one of great, great power. Well, our time is over for this morning, so let us stop there, and may the Lord bless us and encourage us during these uncertain times.